Well, Tom, thanks for taking time out of your day to do this update interview with me. This is September of 2008, and it's been a few years since you and I did an interview about any transformation journey stuff involving you. So why don't you just catch everyone up a little bit, just in case they don't know who you are, if they don't know, you know, kind of how long you've been with Leanness Lifestyle, that kind of thing. And just briefly just catch everyone up a little bit about who you are and who you're married to and what you do and how long you've been with us and that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, you know, pretty much everybody can kind of just see from the past interviews. They can go on the website. I don't want to bore everybody with all of the details. But real quick, I've been a member since 1999. Actually, I was a member of the first mastermind group. That was before even Leanness Lifestyle, if you remember that, Dave.
I hope so. I invented it.
Yeah. So we went all the way back to that. And been with you since then. We did the Body Logics Challenge and Body for Life and Body of Work Challenge, all of that. And again, that history is there. We did the 2002 Mid-States Classic where I won my class in that contest in 2002. So I was really proud of that.
And that's a bodybuilding competition.
Right, exactly.
Right. Okay.
And took it down to a little over 5.3%, something like that, mm-hmm. for that contest. And so that was great, an exciting time in my life as well. All of the transformation processes have been really exciting. Married to a wonderful wife, Terry. We've been married now on October 28th of this year. We'll be celebrating our 30th wedding anniversary. That's phenomenal. I'm a musician, entertainer, and a Leanness Lifestyle master coach.
Yes.
So that pretty much gets you up to speed here.
Yeah, and you're also a certified personal trainer too, correct?
That is correct, yeah. I'm certified through the ISFA and the National Association of Personal Trainers, so both of those certifications. And so a couple years ago we had a little bit of an issue with a back surgery, a neck injury. So in between the contest and doing this latest challenge, if you want to call it, for myself, that kind of occurred. And so from the contest point perspective, I kind of maintained for a year or so, about 10% body fat, somewhere around there. And then in the summer of a year after that, I believe it was, ended up having some problem with my C6, C7, and ended up where it ended up being a blown disc and had to have some major surgery on my neck after quite a struggle through that. And it took a couple of years, really, of recovery overall. But I had lost all the muscle on the right side of my body. During that period of time, all the strength, I couldn't even incline bench press a 5-pound dumbbell, so I had to work through that. And finally started developing muscle after a long period of time of therapy, physical therapy, massage techniques, a lot of different things. And so we got to this point at my 50th, and we decided I had set a goal back after I did my contest to do something special for my 50th, not knowing that I kind of run into a few roadblocks along the way, one being that surgery. So here we are.
And just to give another version of the summary, too, you know, you and Terry had started many, many years ago. You had spent a fair amount of your married life gaining weight, and then a while quite heavy, where I think you had reached a peak of about 250 some pounds, maybe.
Yeah, size 48 pants. I remember that.
And then, so as you had said, you know, 1999-ish came in. Very one of the very very early people to come into Leanness Lifestyle when I first created it. In 2002, you did take your body fat all the way down to that 5% range. You did compete in a bodybuilding show. You did win your class. Since that time, you have gone on to become a certified personal trainer in two different classifications, and also a top-level master Leanness Lifestyle coach. You also teach our live classes a lot of the times. live with new Leanest Lifestyle members trying to learn how to use the website and so forth. So you're heavily, heavily involved. And then after the bodybuilding show, which was in 2002, did the neck disc blowout occur in like 04? Was that about right?
Yeah, about 04.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So they had a couple of disc issues in the neck, and not just issues, literally a blown disc. And for the people that don't understand, when you've got nerves being pinched and things being cut off that way because of a blown disc, what happens is it's like taking a water hose, you know, a garden hose, and just crimping it. And even though you've got the water on full blast, you don't get any water out the end, and your nervous system can't fire the muscles. And what happens is any of the nerve endings attached to muscle fibers relating to the C6, C7, just cervical 6 and cervical 7 neck discs, what happens is those muscles, because muscle is use it or lose it, they just began to atrophy. They began to shrink. And so when muscle shrinks, you get weaker. And I believe that's what you were talking about where, you know, sometime in 04, you actually started to notice the numbness, the tingling, also a decrease in strength, and also a significant difference in just what was going on with certain muscles on certain side of your body as they were shrinking, correct?
Yeah, and it was when it finally did blow. During that summer, I felt like when I come off the stage after performing, I'd feel like I was having chest pains, like something was wrong with my heart. There was so much pressure in my chest. Well, you can kind of figure that out now because of C6, C7. It's around the neck area, and you're breathing real heavy when you're singing, and it puts a lot of thoracic pressure on that area. And so that's what was happening, is actually making the condition worse.
Mm-hmm.
And when it finally blew, I was actually on the radio doing an interview. And when it finally went out and the whole right side of my body went numb, of course, I was stupid enough to drive myself to a hospital thinking I might be having a heart attack. Okay, you're not thinking straight.
Mm-hmm.
But they found out it wasn't that. After some MRIs, they said that it was a C6, C7, and that I'd have to have surgery. And normally they go through the front of your neck and push your vocal cords to do this surgery and then fuse the disc. That was totally unacceptable for me because I'm a singer, and there's a good about a 30% chance of permanent damage to your vocal cords. So I said, well, I guess that's not going to be an option. You'll have to just give me some pain medication. I mean, I've never felt that kind of pain in my life. It was like somebody had literally taken the right side of my body, poured gasoline on it, and lit it. That's pretty much the way it felt.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, we found a surgeon here that does surgery on football players. Very highly well known, and was able to go through the back of the neck. The only problem with that is they have to actually tear through a lot more muscle in your neck, in your entire back, in order to get at that spot. And I still deal with some leftover scar tissue from that, but you know, I have my full strength back, but it took quite some time to regain that strength. My left tricep, or my right tricep, right delt, right pec, it was like, I always kidded to some extent, it wasn't all that funny at the time. I can laugh at it now. I wish I would have taken a picture because it looked like a before and after picture. The left-hand side of my body looked like I had done some training. The right-hand side of my body looked like I'd never trained at all.
Mm-hmm. And you were about basically 46 or 47 then, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So you did have the surgery. You did endure the recovery. You did, and it took a couple years, you know, really recovering and not knowing if you were ever going to really get that muscle back. You know, whether you were going to have the strength, whether you were going to be able to train, anything.
Yeah, the first 6 months were really, really tough. I mean, I'd called you and, you know, really worked, you know, you were great with me, working with me through it, and because it was really emotional. I mean, it was taking away two of the things I love to do, sing, which was very difficult for me to sing with that. Although I could, it was very painful to do it at the time because of the pressure on that area. And then also my lifting, which I love to do, and I did it, but I mean, it's pretty tough when you're used to, you know, pushing 85-pound dumbbells for inclines, and you're reduced to 5 pounds, and you're struggling with it, and you're shaking as you're doing it.
Right.
So it's that was a tough time.
Yeah, it's not like you decided to lay on the couch for a couple of years and then had to fight your way back.
Right.
It was just the nerves cut off the innervation of the muscle, and the muscle said, "Oh, I'm not being you, so I'll just shrink."
Right, exactly. So. And it went away too. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know if it would. I really was beginning to wonder, especially after 6 months, if it would ever come back. But I, you know, just kept at it, kept training, did what I could do, and you know, eventually, little by little, I saw some strength gains.
And share, if you would, too, Tom, although it still takes, you know, it needs to be done almost weekly, what you found really helped with regard to, you'd already gotten back the overwhelming majority of the strength, maybe even 100% of the strength, but somewhere around 80 or 90% is what I'm thinking. But you began seeing, you know, a massage therapist, right? And
mm-hmm.
that helped tremendously to relieve the pulsing spasms, or was it just overall? What did you experience by, this is years after the surgery now, this is 2-3 years after the surgery, and you had done the physical therapy and the standard protocol, but just to tell the listeners too, what you got from getting massage done in that area.
Well, I did two things. The massage was one part of it. The second one, the first thing I'd like to just go real briefly over, I used some special equipment for my neck at a therapy center to strengthen just the neck area.
Mm-hmm.
It's an old Nautilus type of equipment. Medex is the official word for the equipment. There's a special neck one and spine one that I did to help strengthen that area.
Right.
And then the massage therapy really helped release the scarring tissue. What was happening was when I was singing, either when I was singing or even after my workouts, things would tighten up and then I'd get these massive muscle spasms. And the only thing that really worked would be real deep tissue massage therapy. Now, this isn't the kind of massage that you go in and, you know, somebody just rubs you nice and you feel real, real comfortable about. We're talking about massage therapy that I basically call Chinese torture. Because, I mean, my massage therapist gets in very deep. If there's any massage therapist listening, you know what it is. I mean, we're mm-hmm. talking very deep tissue massage therapy. And it's not comfortable. It actually hurts when it's being done for the most part. But a day later, those muscles would release, and I could function properly once again. And so I really, you know, really think that that was a major turning point in my recovery, when we could start breaking down some of that scarring tissue and work through that.
Well, let's fast forward a bit.
Okay.
So we're getting through that. You're able to sing again. You basically, you know, you take some therapy, you are able to get your workouts in, and the majority of them are pretty good. And now you're getting up to the 49-ish year mark,
mm-hmm.
and you decided that you wanted to honor what you had said years before, that at 50 you wanted to do something special.
Right.
So
I got excited about it.
Yeah, got excited. That's right. You had the hot flash.
Had a hot flash thinking, all right, let's do this thing. I'm getting, you know, at the beginning of the year, it was like, okay, this is going to be my 50th birthday at the beginning of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And I had stayed in decent condition. I
sure.
basically was healthy. You know, I was probably about 12, right around 12% body fat. I let
right.
it get up a little bit because I understand that in my mind now, because I had lost so much muscle, in my mind, big was better, not fat, not overweight, healthy, staying healthy. I'm still eating probably 80% leanest lifestyle, you know, having a few more indulgences that
right.
I know I should have,
mm-hmm.
but saying it's okay, you know,
mm-hmm.
giving it the okay, because I'm still at a healthy body weight. I'm still training hard. I'm getting my hard workouts in. But the fear factor for me, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit, fear factor for me was, okay, if I do strip off all this fat, did I really gain muscle? And when I say fat, I'm talking from 12%. And as you know, and anybody that's been there, every increment down from where you're at, you know, if you're 20% body fat and you get down to 12% body fat, that's a significant change, obviously. From 12 to 10 is another significant change, almost as much sometimes, I think, as 20 to 12, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Dave. But
as far as what you see, sure.
You know.
Yeah, I mean, what happens is it's percentages. You know, it's all percentages. It's like, you know, if you're 8% and you go to 6%, you know, that's 25%.
Right, exactly.
That's a 25% exactly. change. So if you are 20%, you know, a 25% change is 4%. So that'd be like going from 20 to 16.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're going to notice a significant difference going from 20% to 16, and you're going to notice a significant difference going from 8 to 6. So
exactly.
So
I was a little afraid of that. I just didn't know what was under there. You know, I mean, I look good in clothes. People, you know, I look very fit, healthy. Nobody said, "Hey, Tom, you're gaining weight back" or anything like that. And I had got my right side back, which I was, you know, felt really good about.
Mm-hmm.
So
I saw you, you know, several times during this period, and no one would have looked at Tom in clothes or even out of clothes in all likelihood, and looked at him and said, "Man, that guy's out of shape." He wasn't. He stayed in shape, like just exactly like he's saying. He stayed healthy. He stayed far in far better shape than the average Wisconsiner.
Oh yeah, I'd say I was in the probably in the 85 percentile there as far as Wisconsiniters at 49. Yeah,
you bet. So anyway, we're talking about going from, like Tom said, we're talking about, you know, he had gotten excited because he was like, you know what, you know, it's been quite a while since he's been really lean. We're talking about going from 12 down to what? What was your initial? Initially we were trying to figure out where to go, and I think through some of my prompting, I had said I cannot think, unless you're doing a show, I can't think of a good reason to go down below 7-ish% body fat.
Right, exactly, and that's really kind of where we ended up. For a while, I was wrestling with that. You know, where should I go? How far should I take it? Do I really need to go, you know, down to 5% again? Is there any reason? And as it turned out, I think we both agreed that 7% would be a good 7-8% would be a good place to be. And then we could really see what gains I had made over the last couple of years. And take it from there, you know, because at 50 you have a lot less of a opportunity hormonally to gain new muscle.
Sure.
You know, so I'm struggling against that too as well. So,
not only the gain of muscle, but you know, tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Was there even a small fear about whether you had lost muscle overall?
Oh, no question about it. I mean, for me, in the back of my mind, and you have to understand, seeing myself in the mirror, you know, in the before after, like I said, one half of my body, I kept seeing myself, you know. Thinking that if I strip this off, I'm going to see what I saw after my surgery, and that was that. Really, until you and I could get through that ambivalence, and you were really helpful with that with me, because I had some false starts. You know, I mean, I had some let's giddy up and go, even as experienced as I am with this, and all of a sudden I'd sit down on it and. I get these starts and stops, and finally, you know, after some long talks and some good conversations with you, found out that, you know, what's really stopping me is this fear factor. Got to get over that again, and kind of the smallies, you know, you had said to me, which really turned things around, said, look, you know, you're only going to be 50 once. You know, you don't get a second go at this. As it turned out, my 50th birthday, I was going to be playing a gig at a large festival here in town. It was the perfect setting to have a bunch of people, to be accountable. And then the other thing is to set it up, my why, a little greater than myself as well, and said, hey, look at Tom, why don't you use all the tools? In other words, try them out again, see if you can break them, see if we need any improvements on them. You know, because it had been a while. I'd been using some of the maintenance tools, but hadn't been using the nutrition analyzer, all that on a regular basis, because it's pretty comfortable for me to just do it ad lib. But I said, you know, all right, I'll agree to that. Let's use all the tools. I'll set up the goal setter. I'll do the whole thing. you know, the NFL Daily. I'll log my workouts just as if I was a student. I will do all these things. And when I did, when I finally committed to that, it was amazing, because I even told Coach Mary, you know, I'm feeling almost guilty, Mary, because I'm like hitting my goal every week, like just like clockwork. It's like almost effortless for me. I mean, I'm almost feeling something's wrong because it's too easy for me. That was kind of a strange feeling. I didn't expect that.
Well, I'm chuckling because I'm going to back it up just a smidge because I'm going back to, I want to talk just a bit about, you know, one of the things that I had told you in one of our conversations is you were talking about the ambivalence, and it was there. Once you'd had a few false starts and you and I were talking on the phone, I could hear that there were some, and it's very common, and I do it too. Everyone does it when we've got ambivalence. There were some justifications about potentially just not doing it.
Oh, yeah. You're right. You know, you're absolutely right.
I'll just stay here. I mean, what's wrong with being here? Am I so bad if I'm 12% and, you know, I'm still able...
I look good in clothes.
I can sing. I'm just happy to be recovered from these from the surgery and the injuries. I feel strong. And is it so bad to be here? And what I heard was this occurred after, you know, a few false starts.
Yep.
And it was right about then when I knew for sure that it was too cloudy and it was too old. And what happened was I told you, I remember telling you straight out, Tom, I don't trust you.
You're absolutely right.
And it had nothing to do with trust as a person. I said, I don't trust your memory.
You're right.
And then what happened was part of the ambivalence was, I remember telling you, well, why don't you say what I told you about your memory of being lean?
Well, you told me it's been too long. You forgot what it feels like to be there, you know?
Right.
And you were right. I mean, you're absolutely right.
Let's not talk about it yet. Let's not talk about it yet. don't give the dessert yet. We're still on the main course. Don't talk about what it feels like yet. We're not quite there.
No, I won't do that. Okay. But you were absolutely right, and it was. The memory was very cloudy as far as I part of that, I think, too, Dave, was the fact that I felt good where I was at.
Right.
And there was nothing to be ashamed of.
Right.
There was no feeling bad mm-hmm. about where I was at. So mm-hmm. it was like, do I really want to challenge myself to this next goal? But, you know, one of the things I learned through this experience was that, you know, you do need to set a different plateau for yourself from time to time. And we'll talk about that maybe a little bit later in the conversation here. And I hope we get back to that, because I think it's really important for people living a lifestyle, living the lifestyle, and Terry and I have done this at different points during, I think that's why we've been so successful over the last 10 years, is that we've set different goals at different times, made them important, surrounded people around us that were supportive of that, made it even into an event, or it became an event, maybe just because we were doing it, we made it public, whatever, and it became a special part of our life. And by doing that, we've been able to stay successful with maintaining the lifestyle.
You bet. And as it relates to you doing this, you know, I do remember telling you all of that, and of course we had, you know, several more, you know, conversations, and especially going back and forth on private messaging.
Yep.
I was, you know, I could see the ambivalence. I could literally hear it in your writing, and I could also see that. And you alluded to this earlier, and I want to make sure people are clear on it. You know, Tom has so much experience, and just like any leanist lifestyler who has a lot of it, successful experience, not just experience and failure, but successful experience. As far as the nutrition analyzer and things like that, Tom did it long enough so that he knows, just by eyeball, within a very tight percentage, what he's eating. And just like I say within the program and on the website, we don't log forever. We log long enough to earn the right to not have to.
Right.
And Tom had done that. He had logged enough. Like he said, he could eyeball it now. I've told others, you know, I don't log anymore. I earned the right to not have to, because I did it long enough. I can go to an all-you-can-eat buffet, and I'll know what's on my plate. It doesn't matter where I'm at. I basically am going to know what's on my plate. And Tom was in the same camp. In our conversations, however, you know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, the six strategies, and I'm not going to lay them out here on this interview, but we talked about if someone has been a weight fighter, or if someone is on the brink of setting themselves up for a new success journey, and they've struggled at some point in time in the past, or in the recent past, or they've had, at some point in their life, they had years of not being successful in battling their weight, I call that person a weight fighter, typically a lifelong weight fighter, meaning that they're always going to have to be conscious, they're always going to have to be putting some effort towards monitoring and managing their weight, and they're going to have to put what we call the six strategies in place. And when I say the six, I don't mean five, and I don't mean four, and I don't mean three, and I don't mean picking and choosing. I mean all six. And Tom, why don't you talk just a smidge about kind of what you had tried to do just for a little bit there as you and I were going back and forth. And we didn't get into a heated battle, but we did get into some interesting conversations.
Yes, we did. I fudged a little bit. You know, at first I pushed back a little bit. Well, Dave, I can do this. You know, I don't really need to, you know, I don't need to use a nutrition analyzer. I don't need to really do that. I don't really need to log my workouts. I'm okay with doing what I'm doing. The problem was that what I didn't see, because I was too close to myself, and that's where you need a good coach. The problem with this is that you know me all too well. We're good friends, too, so you know me way too well sometimes, I think, for my own good. But that is for my own good. Mm-hmm. And you're honest, and you're a good friend because you are honest about the things that you know, you need to share with me in order to help me move forward. And I pushed back a little bit. And it wasn't until, and I put a post on the board, so you can refer to that. I don't want to take a lot of time in the interview because the post is pretty detailed. Once I put in all six strategies, once we got over that, it wasn't so much that I needed that to be successful with the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
It was I needed that in place to get over the ambivalence of what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where the key was. Once I turned that key, it was like putting a key in the ignition, the thing fired up. Revved up, and I was on the go.
Yeah, and there's no question. And not only
I needed all six, though.
You needed all six.
I understand, as experienced as I was, I don't think I would have. Let me rephrase that. I know I would not have made my goal, especially after what happened to me during this process. There's no way I would have made this goal unless I had all six strategies in place. Period.
Right. It not only helped you get over that hump of the early ambivalence and to get some momentum going, but once you had the momentum, it helps and helped, you know, maintain that momentum where you were like you were just like a locomotive. You were just unstoppable, which was surprising. I mean, it wasn't all that surprising to me. It wasn't like I'll tell you, it was way less surprising that you were chugging along as successful as you were once all six were in place. That was way less surprising to me than I'm just going to say out loud what I remember. I was like, Fred Sanford on Sanford and Son when I read one of your posts that it, like you had said, it was just a little bit of a disbelief with you being as high level a coach and as having as much experience as you have in what you didn't need. And I remember thinking to myself, Elizabeth, this is the big one. I'm coming to you. I remember thinking, you know, I'm not reading this. Tom isn't really saying this. And then I had to stop and go back and go, you know what? We're all human, and we all have a certain, you know, we all have certain limitations, we have certain beliefs, and we have certain things that are going to need, you know, to be adjusted along the way. And so after I, you know, got over a mild, heart attack and reading it, you know, I was able to go, okay, wow, okay. So, I mean, just like anybody else, sometimes, including myself, we need that support and guidance and someone to just draw the line in the sand and say, look, this is the only way it's really going to work. And so,
well, not only just any support and guidance,
right.
So, Dave, I mean, I'm talking about somebody that really knows what you need and listens carefully. That's where a good success coach like yourself is really important. And I can't emphasize that enough because of the fact that, you know, it's kind of like watching an Olympic athlete, and the Olympic athlete has gotten there before, like Dara Torres. She's gotten there before. So she can say, you know, oh, man, I really don't, you know, I don't think I need this and I don't need that. And yet, in the end, you know, she ended up having to surround herself with, I don't know how many coaches, 20-some coaches, I think, by the time she was done, and made her successful journey, because you need to have somebody see what you're not seeing during the process. And that's what the six strategies do. And then having a good coach, you know, a trusted coach and friend, and the people around you, surrounding you, being supportive, Coach Mary, all those people being supportive of you as you go through the process, really important, even for the most experienced person.
Yeah,
because,
absolutely.
Like you said, we're human.
Yes, we are.
We all can think we've got it all figured out, and we need to be reminded. You know, sometimes we, even as good as you are, you need to go back to the fundamentals,
right?
And just make sure that they're right.
Well, the good thing about your journey, once all six were in place and you locked in, and you were just, I remember you telling me on the phone, we met for some workouts, and you were just like, you know, it's just going like clockwork. You know, I'm just every week it's just dialed in. It's a lot easier than I thought. Well, you know, and one of the things that I want to attribute that to is that you had absolutely nothing stressful that went on in your life for all 16 weeks that you did it. And what happened was you were cocooned up just like the Biggest Loser people.
Right.
And you had everybody literally was bringing you pre-made meals that were gourmet in style. You had no work stress.
Martha Stewart was cleaning our house. And I had literally people that were actually doing my work for me at work.
And there were no buzzards and vultures flying around at work, waiting literally moment by moment to see if your job was going to be there tomorrow. That wasn't going on.
Nothing happened in there. I canceled all my gigs, so I didn't have to play.
That's
in the band.
And you don't have to. And being an excellent. But like you know, anybody in small business, it's not like you had to lug your own gear and make all the appointments yourself,
right?
And set up all the gig arrangements
none of that happening. And then on top of it, we didn't you know, of course, the sun shined every day.
Yes, it did
every day. There was not a day of rain or shall we say flooding. Oh, my
God. Oh, gosh. So, anyway, you know, as we're laughing about this now,
they're,
you know, all of these things in reverse, of course, you know, if you turn it all upside down, this was all occurring. And without, you know, as being as brief as possible, look, in today's modern world, I don't know if there is such a thing as job security. And you've been at your current job, working for the, you know, for the county in Milwaukee there for, I don't know how long, Tom. What exactly?
16 years for the transit system.
16
managing
years.
Managing the printing department of the transit system.
Right. Mm-hmm. And just like, you know, most places these days, it's touch and go, nip and tuck. If they need you, great. If not, thanks for the 16 years. Have a nice day.
Exactly.
And that's,
it's a tough political arena right now.
Right.
A lot of things. Unfortunately, decisions aren't made on whether you're doing a good job or your department's doing a good job or anything. They're made on a whim by somebody for some political ambition.
So for the purposes of this call, this was going on, and it's actually still going on. You also had gigs to prepare for, to make arrangements for, to set up, to tear down, to actually sing at, and scheduling. On top of that,
busiest time of the year.
Busiest time of the year. And what we're talking about here is are we talking about like March through July?
Yeah, okay. March through. Well, actually, the busiest time for me is March through September, pretty much middle of September. But you know, July 27th, that's 1 week before the state fair starts. So I have to prepare all that stuff for the 10 days at the state fair as well. So July 27th was just a couple days right before the fair.
So July 27th is the actual 50th birthday, and so that's why we're referring to that. So this period of the transformation of going from this 12 down to 7 was from between like March and July, and so you've got work issues, you've got some additional work stress, you've got just the pleasure, yet the dual role of the stress involved with playing the gigs. But then we just... I'm gonna set a stopwatch because you and I could go for an hour and a half on this rain. Let's go to 5 minutes, Tom.
All right.
In 5 minutes, what happened that just made everybody that knows you, all the members, myself, everybody, just shake their head and go, oh, my gosh.
Well, on June 22nd, and I remember the date, I actually made a phone call to you as the rains were coming. And I told you, as we're standing here in the front of the window looking out, Dave, the water is coming up to our house. And it's coming up so high that it's actually at our tree level, which is about, say a good 20 feet from the road. And it was completely flooded, and we were getting massive flooding up here. I wasn't so much worried about the flooding. I was hoping that it wouldn't reach our trailer and actually sweep the trailer away.
Well, hang on.
All my band equipment.
Hang on. Let's clear that up. When he talks, he doesn't live in a trailer, folks.
Right. No. Band trailer is where my gear is.
Tom lives in a nice newer home, and he lives in a nice subdivision, a nice area. When we was talking flooding, he was talking about canoes and kayaks on the street.
Yeah. It was nasty. There were cars that couldn't get through that actually got flooded out. They tried to drive through, and it came up to the window of your car. That's how deep the water was.
Right.
Okay. But we went downstairs, checked our basement. Everything was fine. Life was good. We were like, wow, we're going to make this through. Although as I was talking to you, I said, Dave, I'm chowing on some M&Ms right now. I'm going through some stress factors. I want to let you know that I am definitely emotional eating. I'm telling you I'm emotional eating, and I don't really care that I'm emotional eating because I'm very emotional at the moment.
That's right. And and one of the huge things there, of course, is that I got to laugh with you, and we didn't really talk about that much because I could literally hear just how conscious you were of what you were doing, and I was very, very confident based on everything you had done up to that point, all the experience, just you and I working together, that this was going to pass. It was no big deal, and that's exactly what it was. But we did chuckle about it, and so this water was coming up. You did check the basement; everything looks good. And then
rain started to stop. It kind of slowed down, and I went down to check the basement once again. And noticed that our dog was down there, our greyhound, and she was basically starting to move closer and closer to the stairway because there was actually about an inch and a half of raw sewer water in our basement.
Mm.
So I got her upstairs real quick, said, oh, my God, tried to plug it. It was coming through the sewer drain. The sump pump had worked fine. There was no problem with the sump pump. That was our biggest fear, is that the sump pump would fail. And make a long story short, it started coming in at 9:30 at night, did not stop until 3:30 in the morning. It actually bubbled up. If you want to look at it, it's on a YouTube video called In Deep Shit. I hate to use that word on a
it's what it was,
recording,
though.
But that's
exactly
what it was.
And
it was anything that you can flush down a toilet, folks, was in my basement. So I hope you're not eating as you're listening to this tape right now. But that's basically what it was. And we lost thousands of dollars worth of stuff. We lost our hot water heater, our furnace. It was a complete disaster. And I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to wish it on my worst enemy. And we had to clean it up. I mean, from we started cleaning it up at 3:30, 4 o'clock in the morning, and I took a week off of work, started cleaning, and you have to pressure wash it and do all that stuff. This is all during the time I have to do my transformation. And understand, I train in my basement, or I did train in my basement, and a fairly nice home gym that I built over the years with some used equipment
Very
that I've
nice.
Been able to accomplish.
Very nice.
Choir over the years.
You bet.
And so I had to find out another place to train during this period of time. So I found a local gym called Cardinal Fitness and actually worked out during this time of cleaning and stuff, too, as well. Because this is when the why became really important. I wanted to stop. I wanted to say, I don't really care anymore. This is just, it's a mess down here. I don't have a gym to train in. I don't. What do I care? It's June 22nd. Things have gone fine. Let's just call it quits. I've done really well, and let's just not do this anymore. And yet, when I thought about that, I said, you know what? This is just makes me all the more want to make this thing happen. Because if I can do this through what I'm going through right now, I can do this through anything. I can prove to everyone that this can be done through any kind of circumstance. And so that became an even stronger why. And I knew everybody was coming out for my for my birthday regardless. They were coming out. And I said, you know, I'm not letting them coming out and seeing me defeated. I'm not going to let that happen. I can't let that happen. And so it became an even stronger why. And knowing that people were going to be there to share my 50th on the 27th, I said, you know, it's only a couple months away, a couple weeks away, actually. I just got to turn it on even more and make it happen. It's been going really good up to this point, so we got to make it happen. And so I went to the gym, came home and drained out my equipment, carried it all up the stairs, slowly but surely sterilized the basement, put it back together, went back to work, came home every night, kept working on the basement, worked out, and continued to eat accordingly. I mean, the nutrition was so important. One of the other things that I had done during this period of time was give up diet soda, and I found out that for me is a trigger. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but what it does is it causes me to actually crave other sweet or salty foods. And so I just started drinking more and more water and basically went cold turkey on diet soda. And I found out it was even easier for me to stay on course and on track. So we hit the 27th birthday, hit the ground running, and all the folks were there. And
you were playing a gig.
Yes, we were.
You were playing a gig on your 50th birthday, and you had stayed true to your goal. You kept the strategies in place. You kept your word to yourself. That's most important. You honored it, and a bunch of us came up. A bunch of us, myself and Tracy, and other Leanest Lifestylers came up, and we watched. We got to watch you play and sing. And why don't you just share a bit about, so you did go all the way. You did,
yep.
I think, lose 20-some pounds or something in that range.
Yeah, about. Because I think I started out, I want to say I started out about 186, 187, I believe, somewhere around there. Ended up at 179 pounds, which was my goal. One of the things that helped me over the ambivalence, too, was we set a thing that was going to be, okay, we're going to either hit a weight or a body fat.
Well, you didn't start at 186 and go to 179. That's 7 pounds.
No. 190. I'm sorry, 196.
Okay, there we go.
I think.
There
yeah,
we go.
196.
Okay, yeah.
We're at
okay.
the top weight there and went down to 179.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, thanks for correcting that.
Yeah,
man.
I just was like, oh, hey, seven pounds
that,
and 16
That
would have
been way too easy.
Yeah. But anyway, so you did, and you were like you had said, we did agree that we would get to either the weight or the body fat, and and on the way up, Tracy and I we got held up. There was an accident on the freeway, and so we were getting there not late, but we were getting there after you had already started playing. I was getting text messages, and one of the text messages I got from one of the other Leanest Lifestylers was something like, Tom just took off his coat. Oh my gosh, And I remember thinking to myself, I've seen Tom in great shape. I bet he looks really good. Anyway, I'm sure he's fine. I'm sure he looks really good. Anyway, people get really excited. Geez, people get really excited.
And we get together as Leanest Lifestylers, and everybody gets excited just for being there.
Yeah.
I get excited to meet the new Leanest Lifestylers. It's a really neat community. So when we do get together, mm-hmm. it's a lot of fun. Everybody has a great time.
But so then we got there, and we happened to get there at a good time. You were during a break.
Okay.
And I remember when you came up, you were wearing a body armor. It was a sleeveless body armor. And I remember thinking when you walked up, I remember thinking, holy cow. They weren't just excited. Man, he looks great. And it had been, I don't know, maybe a month since I'd seen you, something like that.
Yeah, I think a month or 6 weeks, because
yeah.
I know our schedules were getting tough. We
mm-hmm.
were trying to get a couple workouts in there in between, and we had been able to do that. And then both of us, with the flood thing, I was just, there's,
yeah.
It was pretty tough for us to get together there. So
I was just blown away, and you were in fantastic shape. You had done it. I knew you had done it. I could tell the second I saw you that you had done it, especially when you're wearing body armor, which is very unforgiving. You're either going to be in shape or you're not.
Right, yeah, it's going to show.
It's going to show.
Definitely, that's as close to being unclothed as you can be.
Yeah, it is.
You know, so if you don't make it there, you're definitely going to, you know, you can't hide. You can't hide under that.
So why don't you just talk for a few minutes about, you know, what it felt like, and talk about that moment when, because you wear a number of different things. You wear a tux, you wear a coat,
right.
You wear different long-sleeve shirts. You do a real, you know, Vegas-style show. And so you have clothing changes and all this kind of stuff. Why don't you just talk about, you know, what you were thinking as far as wearing this body armor and what happened and just that kind of thing. As far as the experience of actually doing it and now you're living it, what you had envisioned probably a year or more before.
Well, I've been fortunate to get really good reactions to our shows, and part of the act is, you know, in the beginning of the act I wear a tux, and then there's a part in the second part of the show where I'm kind of wearing a coat with a shirt, and usually it's been a cotton like t-shirt or whatever, and I've taken that off before, taken the coat off before, and I get a nice reaction a lot of times. You know, it's kind of a fun thing. I take the coat off kind of as I'm doing. I don't do impersonations. I do, impressions kind of different artists. Again, they're not impersonations. They just get the feel and the texture of the individual. So I try to get some of the things that you'd see that person do. So, like with Roy Orbison, I'll put on some dark glasses and kind of be stoic because that's the way he did his performance. With Tom Jones, on the other hand, he basically, you know, he's out there, he's gyrating and the whole thing. So during this Tom Jones segment, I basically take off my coat, and this time I had the body armor on. And the reaction from the crowd was just like, oh my God, you know, and they were cheering and hooting, and the women were screaming, and you know, I didn't have anybody throw their panties on the stage or bras or anything, so I guess I'm not at the Tom Jones level yet, but you never know. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of these days. But, wow. I mean, it was just an incredible... I had not expected that type of reaction. And, you know, since that time, too, I mean, people have said, my God, you know, what did you do this year? You know, at all the shows that we played, you know, we played 10 days at the fair then, and it happened every day at the fair. And as a matter of fact, I remember calling you up during the fair saying, Dave, you really messed me up, didn't you? And you're like, what? And I said, no, I mean, you really messed me up. I won't say what I actually said to you. But, and he said, I don't understand. What do you mean? I says, do you know what you did to me? I says, you basically have set a standard for me now that I can't walk away from. Because every time I take off my coat, people are going to expect to see what they saw at the fair. They're going to expect to see what they saw on my 50th birthday. And if it's not there, they'll go, oh, yeah, well, he's got a pretty nice voice, and he does a nice thing. But, man, didn't he look a little nicer last time?
Yeah, you can never go back. You're done.
I'm
you
done.
Are screwed, buddy. You can never go back.
That was the word I was going to use, but
yes.
Since you used it, that's fine. Yeah, I told you
yes.
That. I says I am totally screwed now.
Yes.
I mean, you know, beyond a, I do. A, it's like doing a bodybuilding show. Mm-hmm. You know, every other week or every week.
Yeah.
During the summer, mm-hmm. several times a week, because now it's my motivation is not only tied to what I love to do as well. There's no running and hiding from this anymore.
No.
I mean, I
no.
can't just go back and say, well, yeah, I think I'll go back to 190 pounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, now when you're playing in those spring and summer gigs.
No.
No.
I might be able to do it a little during Christmas and New Year's, and
right.
That's about it.
Mm-hmm.
But even then, you know, we got shows to do and corporate stuff, so, you know, if they're expecting that show, I have to be ready to go, you know? So there's none of this bulking up and training down anymore.
Hey. Just briefly, what, you know, tell the listeners, you know, what were you thinking when you pulled your coat off? I'm not sure what you were expecting or hoping for, but then at one point, because I remember you telling me you had said, you know, you had said, Dave, I wanted to do this thing. I wanted to have this body armor on while I was on stage, but to tell what your thoughts were, because at one point you decided you were going to, you know, put your coat back on.
Well, yeah, I mean, I feel a little uncomfortable. I mean, I'm not one to go out there and flaunt, you know, whatever. I mean, it's part of the show, so I do it. And when I took the coat off, you know, I got the hooting and the hollering. Okay, that's cool. It served its purpose. And, you know, the next song we're going to do is, you know, from after I do Mark and Anthony, we go to a Righteous Brothers tune. So I reached over to grab my coat to put it on, and they're like, no, no, don't put the coat on. Don't put the coat on. Leave it off. Leave it off. They're all screaming at. I'm like, oh, my God, you know, yeah. What did I do here? And then I'm starting to feel a little self-conscious because it's just like, you know,
Am I a piece of meat up here?
Yeah. But, you know, it made me feel great, you know, to know that, as a matter of fact, this past weekend we played a festival, and I think I shared with you, I feel pretty good as a 50-year-old that there are 17 and 18-year-old girls taking pictures of me on their cell phones.
That's funny.
I mean, that makes me feel really proud. I mean, you know, that I can be at 50 and you know, still have
still got it going on.
Appeal.
Still got
yeah,
it going
a little,
on.
A little something going on,
yeah,
you
that's
know.
Funny.
That felt good. Felt really good.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You did it, and you did it. You were, you know, all along the way, you know, tiny little blips here and there. Otherwise, you were literally a man on a mission. You were just unbelievably award-winning in how you were doing the whole process and with all the things that were going on. I want to give you the last word. What would you like to say to anyone listening about that are, you know, they're getting ready to begin their next journey or their first journey or whatever it may be, you know, about, you know, anything you want to share?
I really think, you know, being a part of the club, staying involved. I know people, you know, in our club, people will go away for a while, but they'll come back, and that's a great thing. You know, you might not be in action all the time. That's okay. Just remember that it's the lifestyle is there, and when you come back, you're welcomed with welcome arms, you know, open arms. And put the six strategies in place. Don't be like me. Don't get the ambivalence towards it. Know that those six strategies that David set forth are really, really important. They're going to make you successful. And if you don't have them all in place, trust me, you're going to stumble along the way. You're going to fall. And it's going to make your journey all that much more difficult. There's a reason why David put those six strategies out there. And it's because of the fact that they work. And whether you're the most experienced member or somebody just starting out, those six strategies are really important. Have a strong why. Your why, I'll get back to that again because I'm the why guy. You know, the stronger your why is, the more successful and more potential for success you're going to have. It helped me get through so many challenges at different points and different challenges along the way that I've had. And if you can set your why and attach it to something that's really important to you, that's public, oh, how much stronger that why is. You know, if you can set a why that's greater than yourself for a purpose greater than yourself, that helps us as well. And surround it with people that are going to be supportive of you and make it public. Make your why public to those people that are going to be supportive. Not people that are going to try to submarine you, but people that are going to be supportive and be there for you. And finally, I think what I'd like to say too is set, you know, as we go along this journey, it is a journey, okay? You're going to have ups and downs during your life. You know, when we're in action, a lot of times the focus, you need those times where you focus on yourself, just on yourself. And as I've gotten older, you know, I've done several different challenges along the way for both Terry and I. As a matter of fact, we're going to be doing a photo shoot for our anniversary in mid-October, so that's another milestone for us. Set milestones along the way for yourself. I think if you set some of those things, make them public, maybe not even make them public, but make them a celebration and enjoy the journey along the way. That's what living the lifestyle is all about. You know, you don't have to be perfect. I wasn't perfect during this journey. Stumbled a little here and there. We had some life things that happened. But all in all, I stayed true to the six strategies. Use the tools that were available to me on the club site, and they did come in handy. They made things easier. Believe it or not, using the tools during the time when things were all kind of coming unglued, I actually came up and logged my meals and logged my foods during that period of time and just printed out my day because it made it so much easier. Rather than trying to, if I would have at that time under that much stress tried to put things together on the fly, I would have definitely stumbled and failed. So having the nutrition analyzer there, knowing I have a day of good meals here, boom, print it out, follow my plan, I'm done. I didn't have to worry about that. That was one thing, no problem there. You know, same with my workouts. This is what I need to do, boom, print it out, do it, done. Log it, finished. So all the things are there to make you successful in your journey. Just keep it going. Enjoy the journey. Make the why or your goal something that's special, but don't forget to enjoy the journey along the way.
Absolutely. Well, incredibly sage words and wisdom being shared there, Tom, and just too much to even really comment on. All I want to just conclude with is just say that we're all really, really proud of you. I'm incredibly proud and fortunate to be able to call you one of my very, very best and closest friends. Very, very appreciative and thankful that you're my top coach and that you've been with Leanest Lifestyle as long as you have, and all of the tremendous good that you do for Leanest Lifestyle and for other members in the community, on and offline. And I just want to say congratulations, job well done, and we got a boot camp coming up, so we'll be coaching that, and we're both still in our journeys, our respective journeys, and who knows where they will go exactly. But I'm looking forward to it, and I have incredibly high expectations of both of us, and I feel very, very confident that you're going to do incredibly well as you go forward, no matter what happens.
Well, I think we've proved that. I mean, we've both gone through some pretty major challenges as we were setting different goals for ourselves at different times. And I think, that's one of the things I appreciate about you. You live the lifestyle, as well. I'm very appreciative. I'm very honored to be a part of something that I think is really special, very unique. I would not be here at this point in my life if it wasn't for all you've done for me in your coaching, in your friendship, and it's just I can't say enough. So I'll leave it at that, and
yes.
Just tell people to get on board, just do this thing, because it's going to enrich your life. I can't stress that enough. It's not just calories in and calories out and nutrition and exercise. There's so much more in the club. And, you do these boot camps, elite member, being a member of the group, being involved on the discussion forum. These are all things that are going to enrich your life.
Well, Tom, thanks so much for taking time to do this interview with us. I know that people are going to get a tremendous value from it, and I look forward to sharing it. So until next time, let's keep things going, and we'll see you inside the club, and so will so many others. So thank you, Tom.
Sounds great, Dave. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.